Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Hope you guys had a good New Year's Eve. Today's show, we're just going to not do the recap of Cavs-Raptors. This was not a particularly interesting game. The Cavs lose 117-97. The most notable thing really to come out of it was frankly probably how people, all the stuff with Kevin Love in this one, the thing of him like hitting his hand on the bench and just kind of looking a little disgruntled, and then him chatting with some Raptors players after the game, and just kind of like being shown with him, and some people kind of being rubbed the wrong way with him on Twitter right now for whatever reason that's the case. But again, they lose 117-97, did have some competitive moments, played it much closer in the second half, but really were beat up by 14 points in that second quarter, and then didn't win a single quarter overall. Sexton leads away with 22 points on 8 of 15 shooting. Kevin Porter Jr. had 13 off the bench and 6 of 17 shooting. He kind of clearly is the leader of the bench scorers right now, so that's going to be something to sort of watch. That's a lot of burden on him going forward. Dante Exum in his third game with the Cavs, 15 minutes again, 1-4 from the field, 0-2 from 3, 3-5 from the line, 5 points, 1 assist, 1 board. Kevin Love had 10 and 11, Tristan Thompson 14 and 11, and Darius Garland had 12 and 4 assists on 5 of 11 shooting. Cavs are back on Thursday against the Charlotte Hornets, a team they've seen several times, but basically it's another kind of bad team. They have just recently beat them, so I think the ideal outcome here is that perhaps they can beat them again. The other thing going on right now too is that Mark Stein via Twitter has kind of reignited the Kevin Love trade speculation, for lack of a better word. As he tweeted at 12:48 a.m. Eastern Time on January 1st, 2020, he said, quote, 2020 is here and the race is on, 36 days until the NBA trade deadline. Heard some fresh optimism on the final day of 2019 that Cleveland may just find a workable Kevin Love deal before the buzzer, .. No other context there, no other information on what could be going on there, but that is going to be, I think, the defining story of the next 36 days is what the Cavs do before the trade deadline. It's coming up here very, very soon. Tomorrow's show with Jeff Siegel will be kind of the first big primer we do on that and how the Cavs could approach some of this stuff. So we'll get into that. But Kevin Love, that's going to be what happens with him if he's gone and what the Cavs get for him. And every angle you want to look at that from, it's going to, I think, be the defining story of the next 36 days before we get to the trade deadline in early February. But this is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's show is myself and Evan Demerill talking about Kevin Love, KPJ, and Jetty Osman as part of our kind of outlook on 6 of the key players on the Cavs. We did the first one last week. The Exum trade broke. Didn't get to post this one until now, but hope you guys enjoy. Hope you had a good New Year's Eve, and we'll talk to you again. I'll talk to you again tomorrow with Jeff, and then Evan and I will be back Friday recapping Cavs Hornets. Cheers.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Locked On Cavs is back. I'm Chris Manning here with co-host Evan Demerill, here for our kind of part two of the breakdown. Again, we're recording this on Sunday, December 22nd. So if things have changed, if something has changed between now and then, I doubt it will, but that's, hopefully I didn't jinx it, but we're going to dive right into how another three group of players, again, Kevin Love, Jetty Osman, Kevin Porter Jr. Evan, I'm going to let you pick. Who do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about the biggest guy and the biggest contract in the room, and Kevin Love. Let's take the biggest whale out first. And then
we've done this. We did this on the last one too, which was my choice, because Colin Sexton just remains, I think, a really interesting figure to put it one way. Love is the same. I'll just say this. My thesis on Kevin Love season is basically that, like, I think he's been good. I also feel as if, like, the way that this team is constructed, the way what he sort of is right now, what this team is, it has all sort of meant that, like, he is helping them be, like, kind of competent, a little more competent, but he doesn't really make them, it doesn't feel like, despite his numbers being pretty decent, that he's not really making the team better in a noticeable way. And I don't know if that's, I don't really know if that I reflect that on him as much as I reflect it on the team, but it probably has to fall on him in some way too.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's not empty calories like Sexton was, like we talked about yesterday.
I think Kevin's putting up solid numbers this year. It's, you know, knock on wood. He's healthy, and that's the biggest thing. But part of me thinks that the Cavs are trying to feature him because he's planning to get traded a little bit. But at the same time, like, we talked about this over the summer where I had, like, a hard stance saying that, okay, well, free agency shook out this way, and the Knicks signed every power forward known to man. Let's start wheeling and dealing Kevin Love. And you brought up a good point saying that there's a lot of young guys on this team, and John Beilein is 66 years young and a rookie head coach. And, you know, you need an all-star power forward like Kevin Love. Like, at the time we said, if he's healthy, to help kind of, you know, ease that transition in a little bit. And yeah, the young guys have had their lumps, but for the most part, I think he's just a solid safety blanket, and he raises the floor, but doesn't raise the ceiling necessarily, because there's only so much you can have Kevin Love do in this point of the game, because they're giving so many minutes to so many rookies and young guys, and it's just not a good, it's not good, but a weirdly constructed roster. So I don't know. It's just, I think he's been fine, but I don't think, like you said, I don't think, like, what he's doing out there is, you know, going to put Cleveland back in the playoff talk, obviously, because they are 8-21. So I think the playoffs might, that ship might have sailed after the good vibes start to begin the season. So I don't know.
Yeah. Kevin, I think I said all the right things publicly.
I do too. Like, never says anything bad to, like, throw his teammates under the bus.
No, it gives, I mean, like, if I'm going to be cynical, because that's what I do, I think he's doing it, and it's like a way that, like, people can't really get mad at him. Like, I think if, like, he came out and was, and, like, or we sort of, like, I think it's sort of out there that he does want to go. I don't think people are, like, mad at him.
No.
I think, like, people are still mad at Kyrie, which I sort of get to some degree, even though he hit the biggest shot in franchise history. But I don't think people are, like, annoyed with Kevin. I think they sort of empathize and get it. I also think it's, like, one of those things where Kevin obviously should have taken the money. Obviously should have secured as many years as possible. I think he talked about that, right? Like, he had with Jason Lloyd, to me, one of the more notable things in that interview was, like, he was like, yeah, like, I got my money, I got more years, like, I got the security. That's sort of what you're looking for. There's a lot of, like, great options to move him. And I don't know if that means you move him next summer. I don't know if that means, like, it's just going to be an underwhelming trade package. I don't know if, you know, I don't know what the repercussions for the team is if he gets traded. Like, I know Kevin's, like, clearly, like, the veterans on the team. Like, he's all the only players he ever really Instagrams pictures of from games. It's Tristan and Jordan Clarkson. You know, I think you just watch the games, you can tell that playing with Colin Sexton has been very frustrating for him.
Yeah.
Which I get. I think he's mostly been good. I think they can lean on him more. I think, like, the little stuff we've seen lately with, like, the Jetty cutting around him at the elbow is a nice little wrinkle. I would like to see more of that.
Agreed.
You know, I just, like, don't know, like, what you do. I don't know if there's, like, an obvious, because I don't think you're going to get blown away with the trade offer, and he's not, like, making you bet. Like, he's not, like, helping things along in a, like, a super notable way. I don't know, like, what the exact right path for is in kind of navigating this Kevin Love experience.
I just let out a sigh. It's definitely a bummer because besides Tristan and, well, Delly, because he came back, those are the last three guys, and Tristan and Delly are on expiring deals and could be on their way out too from that championship team. And it's a bummer to have to, like, say, you know what, it's the end of everything. But at the same time, like, before this good stretch of games where he's kind of looked a little bit more engaged and involved with the offense and everything, like, you could tell that he was just done. Like, you, whatever, he's in the locker room, like, you could just tell he's visibly annoyed with how bad the Cavs are losing, and he's only got so many years left in his career at this point where he can play meaningful basketball, that wants to try and get moved to a contender or something, not even a title contender, just a team that's going to be making the playoffs within the next year, few years. And I mean, I totally get it. And like you said, I think the Kyrie thing, that was a bit of a gut punch, because the Cavs were pretty much at their pinnacle. And it just, that felt like it was a bit of the beginning of the end, because that last year with LeBron in town felt like four seasons within itself, just because of every bad thing that seemed to happen to them. And it just, like, I don't blame Kevin Love for wanting to get out, because clearly the Cavs are going in a different direction, and he could be great for plenty of playoff or title contenders, but it's just also tough at the same time, because like you said, like, he's hard to move. And I forget where I read it. I think it was, might have been Mark Stein or even Shams Charania, but like, teams are asking for a first round pick back from Cleveland to take on Kevin's contract. Like, if you're a team that's rebuilding, that's a tough pill to swallow, because I think at this point it's pretty clear Cleveland's looking for a first round pick and slash or a young player to go with it, and obviously money to make the deal work. But you look at the scope of the landscape of the NBA, like, there's a few teams that make sense, but like, the packages that you would get in return are just super underwhelming. And but at the same time, like we said, he hasn't vocally gone out to the media and completely just didn't throw Anthony Davis and wear that's all folks shirt to the game or before the game or anything. But I'm worried it's going to get to that point if the Cavs don't try and move him by the deadline, because it feels a bit like the Kyle Korver situation, where maybe the Cavs told him, said, hey, it's not going to, obviously you're not happy, like, let's get you somewhere you need to be, but nothing's going to materialize right away. It's just going to reach a boiling point. And it's just like, all these net cons are holding the Cavs back, I think, from moving him as easily. And I think the contract is definitely a big part of it.
Do you have as we wrap up Kevin Love, do you have any a favorite trade destination for him? For me, it's just Phoenix. I just think that just kind of, chucks a lot of boxes. I think the James Jones thing could matter. And if you could get a pick, Tyler Johnson's expiring, and like one other thing, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't get a pick, you get Tyler Johnson, Dario Saric, and is it Mikal Bridges? Yeah, Mikal Bridges out in Phoenix. Like, if you could get that,
I'm good with that. I don't know if you're getting that.
No, I mean, I'd drive Kevin to Phoenix myself if that was the package. But
hey, Kevin, podcast pitcher for you, parts unknown. Ask, you're just going to drive with two bloggers across the country to Phoenix. Cool.
It's just, don't worry about it, just no questions, just get in the car. Look,
we're gonna pay for the U-Haul. I'm writing it off. We're gonna put your stuff in there and we're gonna go.
Exactly.
Mazda 3,
there you go. Perfect. Make, but yeah, no, I think that Phoenix package is the most attractive, because teams I do know for a fact Miami's interested, even though it isn't listed, but the offer for that could be a little, I mean, Justice Winslow is a good player, and you'd get James Johnson in that deal too. Which
I would do Winslow over Mikal Bridges.
I would too, but if you got that, but if, I don't know, I'm intrigued by Dario Saric. I've always been interested if he was on the table, and I think Phoenix would make that push. And then if we're just going to keep going down the list, like, I don't want to do business. If I was the Cavs, I'd never do business with Danny Ainge ever again after the Kyrie trade. Denver, I don't know what you mean. I don't know what the package is, because Michael Porter Jr. scares me, and I feel like that'd be like one of the central pieces, but apparently he's untouchable, so maybe that's not an option. So just to wrap this up, yeah, no, that Phoenix package, like, I think Phoenix makes a lot of sense, and it checks a lot of boxes for what the Cavs are looking for, and I think it would help Phoenix make a push towards the playoffs, God willing, but more power to if they want to do it. So,
yeah, let's call it in. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about Kevin Porter Jr., who I think has been most everyone's favorite Cav this year. He's been just, I think, one of the very fun players for the Cavs, and just coming off the bench and been maybe the most enjoyable rookie so far. But that's going to be right after this break, and Evan and I will be back with more Locked On Cavs. Okay, Evan and I are back. Evan, Kevin Porter Jr., true or false, he's, as I alluded to before the break, has he been the most encouraging Cav, most fun Cavs rookie this year? Is that true or false?
Oh, without a doubt. I was one of the naysayers over the summer who said, I guess the Cavs got another Jordan Clarkson on their plate, because I was uneducated and was a little bit misled by what I've read, and it's just, I don't know. I talked to you about this before we started recording. I spoke with a player on the team recently who said that the way Kevin's situation kind of ended up is you could be a team that drafts a player that you really want, and by all reports and accounts, the Cavs were enamored with Kevin Porter, and the player went on to say that Kevin Porter is the top five talent in this year's draft class, or you can end up with a team that just has to draft you and doesn't get to utilize you. Like, I don't think he'd be having as fun or as exhilarating as a rookie season if he wasn't drafted by Cleveland, and it just kind of feels like the perfect situation all around, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch him just grow little by little and game by game, just seeing what he's got out there. And like, he's, I jokingly said that after the Cleveland drafted him, he's James Harden with a hitch in his shot, but maybe he doesn't ever reach that. But no, he's been a lot of fun, and by all accounts, like, just a good kid to be around.
He's very, I talked to him over the summer. I think he's very fun to talk to. I've talked to him a couple times since. I think he's very fun, kind of engaged guy. I think he's very chill. I think him and Garland have like a similar wavelength in that regard. They're both just kind of more easygoing. Colin Sexton's a little more like football player vibes. I don't get that vibe from Garland and KPJ. I think it's very fun that I like that he's been really good, and I'm happy to eat crow. Because like I was like, maybe he needs to go play in the G League. I was so wrong.
So was I. I'm like so glad.
Like to be wrong. I'm not using Twitter right now, but if I was, you could at me, and I would deserve it. He does two to three things like almost every game where I'm just like, this dude has like really good instincts for the game. This dude sort of knows what he's doing. Whether it's defense and he's like actually like kind of surviving on that end, whether he's like going coast to coast and dunking, whether he is just like able to get a shot off or find a good read or like catches a lot best. He just does stuff every game where like, you know, he's sort of contributing now. Like, is he like legitimately good and figured out yet? No, he's not there. Right? He's still really young. He's really raw. I got to look at his numbers, but I don't think like any of his numbers, if you look at them, they're like, yeah, this guy's like a border. This guy's like not officially the most interesting Cavs young player. We're not there yet. Like, he's shooting 43% from the field and 32% from three. The numbers don't bear out that he's like been great, but he's better than I would have thought he'd be at 19 years old. He's really young, still kind of thin. I'm encouraged to see what he can do going forward, playing 20 minutes tonight and thriving and doing, I think, good again, doing good stuff every game. And I think that's all I think this is like, way exceeded my expectations for him coming into the year.
No, I totally agree, because I think I also was in the camp where maybe part of it is I read a quote, I think it was from something Barton wrote in The Athletic. Kevin Porter has the talent to be a meaningful contributor for Cleveland, but he might have the mentality of somebody who has to spend the year in the G League just kind of figuring it out and developing. But it's just, I think it kind of worked out a little bit for him too. It definitely stinks that Dylan Windler hasn't played for Cleveland yet, but I think that's also a bit of a blessing in disguise for KPJ, because he predominantly plays the backup three behind Jetty. And it's just, like you said, like, it's just little things. You're just kind of like, oh, okay. I think you and I both looked at each other one time in the press box. He made a really smart play, and we like both looked at each other and just kind of nodded, like, just, all right, cool, man. Let's keep it going. And I've been on the record on Forbes saying that after watching him a bit in preseason, we had to do our season previews. I said he is Cleveland's best value on the roster because they got him at 30th overall. And Cleveland considers him a top five talent. Not like you said, super raw, super thin, and he's still kind of learning. And I mean, like any rookie, he's going to have to take his lumps and have bad games, but I've had a lot of fun watching Kevin Porter, and I've completely am happy to eat crow on him, and just I've come around on him a lot, and just really excited to see where he heads next, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's just it's encouraging for sure, especially when the Cavs are losing in such a spectacular fashion sometimes.
Is there a KPJ moment so far that you have been most encouraged by?
I think when he got his first start of the season, he had a career high, and it was just not even that. It was how prepared he looked. I don't know. It's just, it's weird. Like, he's super young, he's super raw, but like, the Cavs just said, hey, we need you to step up and start tonight. And he came out and played just not like blow your mind great, because I'm pretty sure Cleveland lost that game off the top of my head. But and also, just he looks solid. And it's just like little by little, like we keep seeing little by little, it's just small foundation things that he keeps doing, like is encouraging for what his future holds. And hopefully he just keeps building upon it. What about you?
I think that's a good one. I'm pulling up his game logs right now just to kind of remind myself, because I know there's like one game where he like led the team in scoring. I might be hallucinating that. So the Houston game, we're at 24 points, 9 of 15 from the field, 6 of 9 from 3. I was just like, holy shit. This guy like can do some really good stuff. I think the Knicks game is another good one. I also just thought, like, if you just pick out any of the examples where, like, they just, like, threw him to the deep end on defense and, like, he kind of survived, that is really interesting to me. Even if it didn't always do well, even if it didn't always work out for him, like, defending Harden, defending Bradley Beal or whatever, him, like, surviving in those moments, like, those little moments, just anytime he's done that, I'm just like, yes, like, this guy isn't, like, a total like head case on defense. And like that was one of the concerns, is that like he just would not be able to defend. And like he's I don't like you could look up his defensive RPM, it's not good. His overall defensive impact is not like good right now, but I don't think he's like as completely lost as I would have thought he was going to be. But I think if you're going to say like this is the high point for him so far, it's definitely that Rockets game.
The Rockets game is a good example too, and I would agree with that. It's just little by little, man.
He can kind of adapt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just a pro's pro, and maybe it's just the fact that I'm 26 and I'm actually have like the soul of a 50-year-old man. But I remember one day after practice, he was there and he like went out of his way to shake hands with like the media and stuff, and like thank them for talking with him. And I'm like, you know, that's not really normal for a 19-year-old to do.
But, or, like, any NBA player?
Yeah, like, he's definitely grateful to be in the situation he's in. I've been rooting for him quietly, and then I've kind of just translated over to Twitter, and usually it's just KPJ, all capital letters and exclamation point. That's good, so...
Fair.
Just trying to keep it a little balanced, but it's really hard not to root for him just because he's been a pleasant surprise up to this point of the season, and I'm sure it's just going to continue.
Yeah, I will say too. He's really when he. I want to see him get more lobs.
I do too.
He's really fun when he hits lobs. I'm in on KPJ. I'm curious to see. Like, I also think he's benefited from Beeline being a coach who like is willing to ride a hot hand. Like Beeline isn't just gonna like stick to rigidity or lean on the vets too much. I think the games where he's deserved to play a bunch, he's played a bunch without being stretched too far. I think that's like kind of a good. I think this is one of those things that makes this a good situation for KPJ.
I would agree.
Okay, we're going to take one last break, and then we're going to be back with more Locked on Cavs from myself and Evan, so stay tuned. 3, 2, 1. And we are back. Last guy on this list, Jetty Osman, has had a pretty quiet season so far. He's still kind of been – I don't know if this is fair, Evan. You tell me if this is fair or not. He, despite his numbers are actually a little bit down – and fewer minutes per game, but I feel like he's having like a very similar season to last year. Is that fair in your mind?
I think that's fair, yeah. I mean, he's down, doing basic math, 3.6 minutes per game this year, but it's just Chetty, he's always just, I don't know, it's just, yeah, it's similar to last year, but just in a more reduced sense.
Is there something with him that you feel like just isn't clicking?
See, that's tough.
Like, I don't know.
I don't know either, because there are times where he looks like a three-point marksman, or there's times like they figured out that, oh, maybe they should do these slashing plays a bit more. Kevin Love operating as more of a point forward in the situation. Like, there's stuff that seems to click with Jetty, and then it just kind of sputters out a little bit, and then he'll have like this inconsistent cold stretch where you're just like, man, this is a bummer, but maybe it's just more so the point that, like I was preaching on Sexton in the last episode, that maybe we're starting to get a taste of the Jetty Osman that we're really going to get, that maybe he's more solid off the bench as a high energy guy who can provide you with X amount of minutes per night, but he's solid across the board offensively. He can give you a little bit of playmaking. He can rebound. He's reliable enough. I mean, defensively, I don't know if he's as bad as he was last year. No, he's not, looking at his defensive ratings, but at the same time, like, he's not going to blow your mind defensively, but I don't know. I think small forward will always be a position the Cavs need to upgrade. It's a pretty tough act to follow considering who used to play there. But it's just like, you see these good stretches Jetty has, and you're like, all right, he's going to turn the corner, and then he takes three steps backwards, and you're like, okay, well, I'll just keep waiting on you, I guess, bud. But I don't know. It's been up and down for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at his box scores from the last several games. It's not even like he puts together, like, none of his things like really add up. So if you look at his last five games, so first you have December 12th against San Antonio, plays 38 minutes in that win in an overtime game, 6-12 from the field. Okay, next night, next game on the 14th again in Milwaukee, 3-11 from the field. Then at Toronto on the 16th, 4-10. Then he has his best game maybe of the year. At least in terms of his offense, on the 18th against Charlotte, 8-12 for the field, and then against Memphis in 21 minutes, so 11-minute dip, 5-9 from the field, 3-5-3. He goes from like having 7 assists in, you know, one game, and then has like 1 the next game. It's like all just very like all over the place, and I don't know if that means like that is just what he is. There's things that I think he's better at that I do think would – my thesis on him is that, like, I think he will look better when the Cavs are just kind of more put together.
I'd agree.
But, like, we're never going to know that. The problem is you never can know that. Even though they have him under contract, then it's, like, a pretty tradable contract if they wanted to go that route, if they wanted the package to get their salary for whatever reason. Jeff Siegel, friend of the program, has said, like, that's, like, it's like a Jay Crowder-type tradable contract. I don't know if like, he's just going to be all over the place until things are just more stable, or if he's just going to be kind of a high variance guy. It might just be that until like they are good or solid again, it's just he's going to be like this, where he's just like kind of up and down a little bit. And like I think he's been fine. I think he's a I think he's a useful rotation player. I don't think he's like not worth playing, or like I think he should be getting 25-ish minutes nights or whatever at least. But you know, he's not been like wowing this year. If there's a thing that I'm surprised by, I guess it's like that his 3-point percentage is up.
Yeah.
Making the same per game as last year, but on slightly fewer attempts. So he's like been about the same kind of guy from in a sense. Even though his shot still feels very streaky, and he does still feel just like a little bit scattershot in a way that's kind of surprising.
No, I'd agree. And it's tough to gauge because, like you said, he's just so up. It's been a roller coaster with him. Like, there's high highs and low lows with him, and it's just hard to properly gauge, like you said, until maybe Cleveland kind of rounds out the roster a little bit and figures out, all right, well, where does he fall in the grand scheme of things? And like you said, he's a tradable contract, but at the same time, don't want to sell the farm on him too quick because, like I've mentioned before and I've been on record elsewhere, it's just this is – pretty much his sophomore campaign at this point, because that first year when LeBron's last year, like he played 11 minutes per game, and even then, like, there's a lot of growing pains for him. So this is his like second year where he's really getting a lot of burn, and eventually he'll have to peter out, I'd like to hope. But I don't know, maybe it's like Omri Caspi when Byron Scott was the coach, where he never had a consistent role, so he would be hot for a little bit and then just completely sputter out, and hopefully the Cavs don't repeat the same mistake and they just kind of figure out, like, this is what we're going to use Jetty with going forward, and if it's a rotation piece off the bench or if he's the starting small forward, stick with it and you ride with him, and hopefully you just hope for the best. I'm a bit of an optimist with most of the things of the Cavs, and you just hope it just levels out and everything just works out nicely. And that's, I guess, where I'm at right now at this point with him.
If you were to make a starting lineup change.
Oh boy.
I think the two obvious candidates would be Jetty or Sexton. Who would you change both, and why?
Are we saying that Jordan Clarkson is no longer in the picture, or is he still in the picture?
I'm just saying, like, in a vacuum, if you need to adjust one, which is it?
I would bench Colin and start KPJ because
I like that.
Statistically, I mean, it might be the birth of the Portland backcourt, just to ape off something else Justin Rowan's been trying to tweet new existence. Garland plays really Garland plays really well in that second unit, and KPJ is a big part of that second unit, and Jetty, like we said, is streaky, but it's not to the point where his shooting is actually detrimental at times to the Cavs, where there's Sexton who will just keep jacking it from three-point range, or he'll just keep shooting it to try and get out of a slump, where it can actually cause some harm, because Jetty at least can move the ball as well. He's averaging 2.1 assists per game at this point. I mean, that's comparable to Sexton, but if you're going to say Colin Sexton is a point guard and he doesn't move the ball, why do you keep lying to yourself and the fans? Why don't you just let Darius Garland take the reins? And Jetty plays well off the ball as well, and there's been instances where he's shared the floor and he's just been the benefactor of just getting a kick out from three on the perimeter, because the opposing defenses don't respect his shot. And I don't know, like, that's the other thing too, like, Jetty, like you said, Jetty is putting up a similar 3-point percentage on less attempts, and then Colin is completely nosedived. So you just kind of just shake things up a little bit and just hopefully for the best. What would you do in that situation?
I wasn't going to say that, but I would do that. I don't know what I think it's Sexton. It's easier if Clarkson's not around.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the problem here.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to justify if Clarkson isn't in the picture, because you can, I don't want to say easily, but it makes a lot more sense to plug Colin in as the
Sexton can go play that team's wolf role.
Yeah, the wolf, quote unquote. God, no, I don't want to play
whatever that actually forward. Means. I think it might just be some shit, but like, if you can go do that,
it's good coach talk. I don't know. It's just, if Clarkson wasn't in the picture, you could plug Sexton into that six-man role, even though, Jordan Clarkson. No, Della Dova is usually the first person off the bench, just because Bayline found an offensive wrinkle that works with having Garland run the second unit. But it's easier to plug Sexton into that six-man role, or just the lead scoring guard off the bench if Jordan Clarkson is in the picture. But even if he is, like, you can make the switch. And I know there's been rumblings that Bayline has flirted with the idea of breaking up those two, but it hasn't happened yet, so we'll see what happens. But if I had to make the decision, I would bench Sexton and start KPJ, just in terms of size as well, because you can actually put KPJ on two guards and not worry about him getting completely cooked, as we touched on before.
Yeah, I think if I'm looking way ahead, I think I'm probably, like, I'm going to just pull up a list right now just to make sure I can kind of, if there's a name, I'm probably next year, if I'm the Cavs, even if, like, you take a wing in the draft, even if, like, you know, you want to believe in Windler, if you want to believe in KPJ, believe in Jetty, like, you have these young guys that are under contract and you can do stuff with them, and you do need a lot of wings. So, like, it's not like they're not going to need, like, they're not going to, like, you need a lot of wings. Like, you can play more guys. They'll probably play a little bit smaller next year. Even if it's like a 1 year stopgap type guy, I don't know, like, who that is. Like, maybe it's Kent Bazemore. Maybe it's like, I don't know. Like, maybe it's Kent Bazemore's like the one that Jim Lutz. Maybe it's MKJ, even though he's sort of a four. Maybe it's like, it's just somebody. I'm probably throwing like a big 1 year offer, and there's not like a great, again, there's not a great answer for this. I'm probably throwing like a 1 year kind of big offer at somewhere I can plug in and start a small forward for 1 year while my young guys develop.
I'd agree with that, but like,
or like trying to pay Brandon Ingram all the money.
Well, apparently Brandon Ingram isn't available in trade talks anymore, so maybe New Orleans is wising up on things. But it's definitely tough. I don't. It's. I'm thinking like there's Kent Bazemore, Evan Turner,
Justin Holiday.
Evan Turner is so bad for Atlanta. That's like who I thought. I was so nervous. You were about to say Evan Turner. I'm like, no, Chris, what are you doing right now?
It's a bad free agent class. Like, there's not like a good option for us here to like really like throw out there. If Nick Batum, like, he shouldn't turn down his player option, but like if he did, say like we'll give you $20 million like for 1 year. Why not? You know.
I mean, I like Nick Batum, but
Courtney Lee. Roll the dice on Andre Roberson.
You could, but. It's just like, God, you keep listening to these names. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And then,
I'm thinking Jeff Siegel's list on early bird rights, and it's like, Hayward's not going to be there. Don't want DeRozan. Porter's probably staying in Chicago, you would guess. It's like Bazemore, Courtney Lee, Roberson, Justin Holiday at a cheaper number. You know, Joe Harris, like, I like, but he's not really a three in the way we're kind of describing it here. There's not a lot of options.
There we go. Yeah, it's just a bummer overall. I mean, maybe Mo Harkless, I don't know. But even then, I think he might be out of the stratosphere. Maybe he.
Yeah, and like, there's some of these guys that want to come play for a bad team.
Probably not, no. And I mean, I guess maybe you kick the tires on Stanley Johnson. I don't know.
Maybe
Jackson, maybe
Reggie Bullock's healthy next year.
Maybe we'll bring Jay Crowder back for old time's sake.
Let's go. I mean, I don't think that ended well. So maybe not.
CJ Miles. CJ Miles.
Look, the legend. This is a pro CJ Miles podcast host here. So I would be down for that. There's not a lot of good options. I think Jetty's probably again better. Sir, I think we're right. I think we're in agreement, I should say, in saying that he's probably better served long term for the bench. That's sort of why I think like 2020, you maybe like just use your wacky cap space for like a big 1 year deal to like go get someone to just fill a gap. That's kind of what I would do, I think.
I agree. Because in 2021, Kawhi Leonard's available, Paul George is available, LeBron's available. I mean, those are options for the Cavs because they'll definitely be a playoff team by then. So.
Hey, look, LeBron plus Bronny.
Plus DG plus TT plus
this is just
AL. Just
if you keep Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
It's just a clutch. This is just a clutch franchise.
It's just a clutch franchise. I jokingly texted my friend after the Cavs beat Memphis and said, you know what, man? Just throw an extension at everybody. The Cavs are 4 games out of an 8 seed. Let's reach their ceiling. So. Yeah. That's Evan, totally a joke now. So. Yeah,
I'm here for it. Okay, wrap it up on this. Christmas Day, we're recording this ahead of time. Here are the 5 games. Celtics, Raptors, Bucks, 76ers, Rockets, Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, Pelicans, Nuggets. Which is your favorite?
Probably Bucks, Sixers, just because I like watching Milwaukee play a lot. Like I said, I think on the last episode, I was in Milwaukee to watch them blow the doors off Cleveland, and boy oh boy, they are an aesthetically pleasing basketball team to watch play. And Philadelphia is just a lot of fun too, just because Embiid is exciting, even though he makes my heart stop every time he falls on the ground. But it's just, that's gonna be fun. And I think Clippers Lakers may not be as fun because LeBron may sit out because of his injury, but so that might turn into a big old can of ass whoop on the Clippers part. But Boston, Toronto. Toronto's a lot of fun, but
they have a lot of injuries.
They have a lot of injuries, and Boston's solid, but I think that's probably the noon matchup, so I won't be too rushing away from my family to see that. But Warriors, Rockets, that gets me 2 thumbs down because the Rockets are worse than Cleveland, and you get a little Schadenfreude from that, but the Rockets frustrate me to no end. We'll see what happens when they play. I know Bayline's job is safe, but maybe
there's 2 unintentional bad games on this list. Pelicans Nuggets shouldn't have been bad, but there's no Zion, and Rockets Warriors wasn't supposed to be this bad, but there's no Curry, there's no Clay, and like really bad.
Yeah, no, it's a bit of a bummer for sure. But I mean, hey, if they really want to, they could bump Cavs Hawks and they could just watch defensive disaster on Christmas Day. And
nah, I am pro having Christmas Day off. That's like a blue perk for me.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, trust me. Working Christmas Day for it's. I love basketball. Give me my day off. All right, that's going to be it though for this Locked On Cavs. Everyone have a Merry Christmas for myself and Evan. If you are celebrating, just enjoy the day. Go see Uncut Gems. I'm going to go and try to see Uncut Gems because that movie looks ridiculous and amazing. But Kevin Garnett's in it and just seems cool. But for myself, for Evan, happy holidays from Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you again on the 26th. Evan, thanks again, man, for coming on and for co-hosting this with me now.
Yeah, no problem, man. Happy to be here. And we will have to talk Uncut Gems because I'm going to try and see it. And maybe we can talk Knives Out.
So after the break, we're going to do a segment now, like because Knives Out's incredible. We're going to do a Knives Out Uncut Gems segment on the podcast.
Yeah, there we go. We'll talk movies.
Yeah, I've never been more happy about like locking like this partner just because like we are going to do this.
Yeah, perfect.
Uncut Gems, Knives Out, right at my bag.
Yep. Did you see Star Wars yet?
I did. We'll talk. We'll do a Locked On Cavs movie pod on the next one. Listeners, thank you so much. Right.